So thank you very much, and thanks for coming. I'm a little nervous because I've never spoken in front of so many people, so be a bit generous. I also brought some live demos with me, because Mirko just said it's going to be much cooler if you do the live demos here, and even if they fuck up, the people will enjoy it. So let's see. Usually live demos tend to fuck up. I rehearse them like 7 times, but usually the more people are watching, the more likely it is that they fuck up. So we will see. So my background is I'm from audio and video industry, broadcast, event techniques, and so on. And there we had like one cable for every signal. So lots of cables, it was very inflexible, and we used the embedder for getting in the audio from the video, and it was just heavy load, and we were looking for something more flexible. And we've seen others sending audio and video and signals over the network, so we said, yeah, we want to send professional audio and video over the network as well. But we want to have the same quality as before. So it needs to be synchronous, it needs to be with ultra-low latency, and the latency has to be controlled and predictable, always the same. But as you know, the networks are asynchronous. They don't send packets at a constant rate. Packets can be out of order. And there is no timing guarantee. And we've been lazy and said, yeah, maybe we don't want to invent the wheel by ourselves. So we looked at other industries, and we found a solution to synchronize clocks very precisely. So that was the idea. It's used in telco. Actually, I just met the GSM people from here. They use it to synchronize the cell phone station. It's used for measurements. Like you can track where the earthquake is coming from if you have different sensors. It's used in trading. So like I've sold my NVIDIA stocks before the big market crash, like 2 nanoseconds before. Or it's also used in power grids to synchronize the different power plants. And I just learned today that they also use it in R-Mode project, which was a very interesting talk this morning, thank you. Which was also one of the goals to do a Hero Speak, to get to know other people who are using the same clock synchronization. So with this in mind, we invented the concept of synchronous media transport. It's like the transmitter, the mixing desk, the video camera, the audio player, the microphone. When it sends a packet in the network, it does a timestamp on it. Like this packet was sent 15 minutes after 9. And the receiver, which can be a loudspeaker or also a mixing desk, a monitor, this device reads the timestamps, adds a defined offset. We call it link offset, but it's also called delay or buffer or so. It has other names, but actually it's link offset. And it's played out exactly at this time. But of course, this concept needs that the two devices are synchronized with exactly the same time. It doesn't need to be the actual time, just any time, and they need to have the same. And exactly this concept is used in AS67, which is an open standard for sending uncompressed audio over the network. It's used in SMPTE 2110, which is video and audio. Actually, that's from the video guys, and they've also been lazy, or we call it resource efficient. They said, yeah, we are video, but we have to do audio for the video as well, so let's just take for the audio part the AS67, which is already invented, so we only have to care about the video. And there is AVB Milan, which is also audio and video. And there are also different solutions from the vendors like Dante, Ravenna, QLAN, LiveWire, Vitnet. They are also using it, the same concept. It's not used by NDI, Netflix, YouTube, and also when you watch TV, you know the thing, there is a football game going on, the striker is going to the goal, and you already hear the neighbors like, oh, because they're ahead of time, so it's not synchronized. But these technologies, they are synchronized because they all share the same clock. what are we talking about exactly? It's a precision time protocol. It's like similar like NTP, but more precisely. So NTP is also called not so precise time protocol, but that's just the internal name. There are different versions. Actual one is V2, which is actually used by most of the technologies. There is a version 2.1, which is called White Rabbit. It's used by CERN and also by this R-mode technology. And I think it's also used in the flux compensator as well, but that's just theory. Then there is ABB Minan, which is using the same, but they just don't put the IP addresses on the packets. They just put MAC addresses on the packets. But the concept-wise, it's the same. So how does it work? It requires the time transmitter and time receivers. Formerly, they used to call them master and slave, which is not used anymore. We will see the term anyway, because actually the measurement device never updated it, so on the measurement device it's still called master and slave. They changed it to leader and follower, but actually when the term was in the grand leader in Germany, they said, this term is also not very good, so we are going on for time transmitter and time receiver, which is safe. So this time transmitter, and please, if I fall back for an old term, excuse me, it's just the nervosity. So we have a time transmitter, which sends sync messages, usually like multiple times per second. It's like, I don't know, in Switzerland we had this phone, you can call it, and they said, at the next beep, it's 7 o'clock and 15 minutes, beep, and then you know how to set your time. So the sync message is nearly, it's like the same. It's sent like multiple times per second. Thanks for helping me there in the front row. We brought the time transmitter. It's over there in the, I don't know, Besenkammer in German. Because there's a long cable running over here. Then we have two switches. And we have different time receivers, which are getting the sync messages. So that's actually the picture from inside the Besenkammer, the low one. And let's have a look at it. Hopefully this works. Please tell me if it needs to be bigger. So we are looking at Wireshark, and we see we got here the time transmitter. It's sending sync messages like regularly 8 times a second. So I just hit stop. And we got the timestamp, which is like saying 1,766,000,000,000 and so on, which is the seconds started counting at 9070, which is actually not very user readable. So because I heard everyone likes LEDs, hopefully this works, I built this LED PTP clock. It seems to be working, but let me put it over there. Still working. Actually, ChatGPT did it, but it's okay. So, go back to the presentation. So the sync messages are often multicast, which totally makes sense because there's one time transmitter sending it to different time receivers. But where does the time transmitter get its time from? So there is an antenna, and it's using GPS, GNSS, like Galileo, GLONASS, BeiDou. We had the pleasure, because we are not in Saal 1, we could mount a GPS antenna outside. Wouldn't be possible over there in Saal 1, but here was possible. Thanks for organizing that. So then, is the time correct? Actually, oh, damn, live demos. Actually, PTP is using the Thai time, which is Temps Atomique International, which is not like UTC. In the UTC, the normal time, they are using, like you all know, leap days, the 29th of February. So in PTP, in UTC, they also have leap seconds, and there is 47 of them since the time started. So Thai has now 47 seconds difference to UTC, and because we are in Hamburg, we have winter time, we have 1 hour off, so it should be, actually, it should be okay. Isn't it? Oh, thanks, God. So, okay, cool. So, it's actually correct? It's this Thai, it's not UTC, it's not winter time, it's Temps Atomique International. Because, like, these leap seconds would just be like if you have like a year 2000 problem, like every some years. Also, in UTC now, they said, these leap seconds, they are so much work and so much trouble for all the devices. At the moment, it seems they are not adding another leap second. So this 47 seconds difference will be most likely forever. So is the time precisely correct now? Yeah, maybe not for buying CCC tickets at the exact time, but it could be good enough for us here. Actually, the signals, they are traveling with like 2/3 of speed of light during these cables. And we have like 100 meters of cable from the time transmitter to our clock here. So this is like 5 nanoseconds per meter. And now it's the question, are we 500 nanoseconds off? I don't know, let's check. So I brought, actually because I know this wall clock is really cool and every office should have one, I brought a measurement device with me because it's not very readable. It's, for the ones not seeing it, it looks like this. And the set even is looking like this. So we have the time transmitter, we have the network, and we have this measurement device, which is also using the GPS or GNSS clock, and it can compare the two times. And we are just... I just restarted it. So you're looking at the display of the measurement device. And like if the line would be straight zero, that's the perfect time. But now we are also keep the scale in mind. It looks like we are between zero and 650 nanoseconds off. And keep in mind we are already talking about these 3 digits here. So, but okay, we are 650 nanoseconds off between. Oh, now we're going a little bit faster. So could be okay for buying tickets. But if we really want to be sure for the next Congress to get the tickets, we might can do it a bit better. So, and we are not too much off because PTP actually compensates for the cable length here. So the clocks, they are sending a delay request. And the time transmitter replies with a delay response. So actually, they measure the round trip. They divide it by 2. And then they say, oh, OK, the round trip is 1,000 nanoseconds. So a half of it is 500 nanoseconds. And they are assuming they're 500 nanoseconds off. So they add this to the sync messages. So far, so good. Time synchronized, all good, finished. But just a little hint. does the time actually need to be correct? Yeah, as we said, for buying tickets, but for audio and video, a lot of standalone systems, they just run on times like 90-70. They just start at 90-70, count every second one by one, and they're running fine. For other applications, time needs to be correct. Here, the time just has to be the same for everyone, and there may not be time jumps, because that would cause two audio and video dropouts, and that's definitely not what we want. But when we would share like audio and video with different sites, clocked independently by GPS, GNSS, then the time needs to be correct. So during during the time I spent with PTP, I had the chance to be involved in some project, and I would to share some experience from that. So one of the first challenges of PTP is that built like this, it's depending on the traffic. So we are adding some traffic to the network, which is like we have here the first switch and the second one, and we are adding some traffic between these two links. And let's have a look at the time and how it's behaving. So remember, at the moment we are between 0 and 500 nanoseconds off. So we add some traffic to the network. And that's actually the bad thing. It can be dependent on traffic in the network. If there's more going on, time can be much more jittery than without any traffic. So what can we do? There is PTP hardware support in some of the switches. Actually, these switches then can be, they call it PTP transparent clock. The switches know how long the sync messages are queued in the switch, and he sets a correction field in it. Then the time receivers, they say this correction field, and they know, okay, the switch, he had like 350 microseconds to process this packet. So he just sums it down, and he has the correct time again. Let's do it. We just, traffic is still running. We are still having some jittery time here. We log into the switches. Do it a bit bigger. You see it? Yes. It's called PTP mode E2E transparent. Do it on the second one as well. So sometimes you get lucky with the knife demos as well. you see the measurement device, it's auto adjusting the range. So I just restarted that we can have a closer look. Yeah, okay. So at the moment we are between 50 and 80 nanoseconds off. So we already brought it down to the last two digits, which is not. Actually, it's not getting better because the measurement device is already running on its internal oscillator, and it's running a little bit off because we don't have GPS reception over this one. And so, but it will never be zero. It will be always like a little bit oscillating between plus minus 20 nanoseconds. With this, and actually, I've seen this on the test before, and I really have to dig in because it actually could be a bug, but let's see. We will see. We will see for that. Just so you know how it looks in Wireshark, let's just add Wireshark. you see there's this correction field in the sync messages, which is here still zero, which is actually not good. But there is another message. It's the PTP follow-up message. Because it's like a little bit a chicken and egg problem. The switch has to timestamp into the packet how long he took to process the packet. So, yeah, but he just knows when the packet is processed, so then he has to put it in the packet. So it doesn't work, or mostly doesn't work. Some device can like do a prediction, but this switch says, oh, I'm gonna send a follow-up, and in there I'm gonna tell the time receivers how much it took me for sending this packet. No follow-up. That's the follow-up switch. And as I said, there is no absolute correct clock. In audio and video, we say jitter of plus minus 500 nanoseconds is okay for every device. There are differences in the devices. Some devices accept more. Some are a little bit more picky. But plus minus 500 nanoseconds is good for everyone. And just a little hint at the current state of the industry. The technology AVB Milan is mandates this PTP hardware support we have just seen. Dante, AS67, 7020110, they do not require it, but they can benefit from it as well. But of course, you have to activate it in a switch. And at the moment, we see some comparison where one technology is like compared to the other, and one has this hardware support in switches activated and one not, which can lead to misleading conclusions. So when we were involved in our first big PTP project, we found out about these fluffy things called dispersion compensation units. They're used in WANs. Actually, someone told me at my last speak that they are not used anymore because now the SFPs can compensate for a lot. But they are still in use and in many networks that are operational. So actually, it's just like 1 or 10 kilometers of cable in a little housing, which is compensating for the different wavelengths of the lasers in these fibers to align them back. I wanted to buy one on eBay to bring you, but it was actually pretty expensive, so I did one for a dispersion compensation unit simulator, which is actually it's lying here. It's just like it's 200 meters of cable, and we are gonna adding it to this fiber link. And it's 200 meters, so it will give us a time error of 500 nanoseconds. Let's have a look. Yeah. Because the light needs to travel 1,000 nanoseconds for traveling this 200 meters, and half of it, which is the compensation, is 500 nanoseconds. So that's dispersion compensation units. We don't like them, and it was actually a little of trouble because it was like 50 places all over Switzerland. We went there, and we thought, yeah, nice, it works. So we went there with the measurement device, and we've seen that the time was different on every place. So then we had to really compensate for each of these links, and the vendor of the switch actually put it in this function, which is called asymmetry link compensation, which is depending, of course, of the layer one topology, which is kind of bad. But back then, it was really compensated in each link to align the times correctly. So, the third challenge that we were facing was scalability, because adding more and more time receivers is more and more load for the time transmitter. every device is sending delay requests and delay responses, sending a delay request, and the time transmitter has to send a delay response for everyone. It's a lot of messages, it's a lot of work for the transmitter, and some companies even charge you licensing fees for the time transmitter. But there is a solution, and it's called a boundary clock, which gives the switch the option to have its own clock, like getting to the transmitter, setting its own clock, and then act as a time transmitter for the other devices. So here is also this term coming from grandmaster. Now we have the grandmaster over there. Grandmaster is still an allowed term, they say, in the specs. So we can also call it primary time transmitter, and this one is just a normal time transmitter. It's like it's like a chain of command. The first one, second one, and so on. So with this, the whole system becomes absolutely scalable. So the because I don't want to take more time than given, I have to just check my watch. Okay. But I think, it's okay. I don't want to get the event out of sync, actually. Yeah. So who is the time transmitter? Like every device able to be time transmitter sends like an advertise for itself. In audio, most of the devices can also be the time transmitter, like all Dante devices and so on. In video, they say, if someone buys a video equipment, then they usually also buy a time transmitter, so the video equipment is not capable of doing time transmit, usually. So every device sends in the network its priority, but unlike politics, they also listen to each other. So I have this device. And let's have a look at Wireshark. Wireshark is always telling the truth. The devices can lie to you, but not Wireshark. So here, that's our current primary time transmitter, which is sending his announce messages saying, hey, everyone, listen to me. I got lucky number 14, thanks for 15. And everyone that's not having a better priority, in IT, better priority means lower number. And everyone not having a better priority, shut up and don't be time transmitter. And actually, this happened to a big broadcast station. They had a sales guy coming in and said, hey, I got this very nice new headphone preamp doing audio over IP. And they said, yeah, let's check it out. So actually, it was on another company as well. And the priority is set on the device itself. So we just add it here. I add it on port 9. Please remember that we're adding it on port 9. It's a PoE, so it needs a bit of time for booting up. And also watch the clock, because this device has a different time in it. It's just the last one it has stored. It's booting up, and it's looking in the network, and it sees, the current time transmitter has number 14. If he's better, he will start sending announce messages himself and sending out sync messages with its time. Still booting. So yeah, you see, it's the announce messages usually is sent once per second. Yeah, this is taking ages, of course. That's a live demo. We can also watch a little bit on the measurement device. So we are still around this 500 nanoseconds off. I thought about bringing a PoE injector, but okay, here we go. So, this device overtook the network, and this caused a time jump, and in an audio or video installation, it would cause audio and video dropouts. But there is, of course, there is a solution for this as well. Of course, you can also, like, it's an easy thing to generate these announce messages just in any packet generator, sending in a zero in an existing network. But some boundary clock switches, they offer a feature that's called port role master. That's still called like this. And it actually says to one switch port on this interface, never accept any sync messages, never accept any announce messages. Just ignore them. It's like DHCP snooping. So let's try it out. Let's enable it. This is the second switch. So PTP mode boundary, I do it on both of the switches. And on the second switch, I add interface Ethernet 9, PTP role master. And let's check in Wireshark. Our lucky number 14 should come back, and hopefully the time also changed back to the original. No, not yet. Let's see. Oh. Haven't seen this one yet, so interesting. But actually, the devices are definitely not going to like it. So, but that's I also activated the boundary clock, and the switches might need some time to set their internal time. Mm-hmm. Maybe it needs a power cycle. Yeah, not the perfect thing of ChatGPT, but let's see what the measurement device is telling you about it. No, actually, so was not that far off. I just restarted to. Okay, we are quite. Let's check. It's port 9 on switch 2. Did I do it on the correct switch? Let me check. Yeah, it actually looks good on the switch. So the switch is still talking about master and slave. He's saying he's slave on port 11, that should be actually correct. But still way off. Give it some time. It would be a live demo if everything just worked, so we'll give it some time. Yeah, so this is the security feature, or one of them. 10 minutes? Yeah, we will be perfectly in sync, I promise. No correction values needed. So PTP port role master, it's a function that not every boundary switch supports, so be aware of that. And then let me check. Oh, sorry, I don't see it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not magic. So, you see, the system, reboot does always good, actually. It's back on the original time, but we are still, actually it really just, I did not reboot anything else, it just needed some time. And you see we are still 500 nanoseconds off, because I still have this asymmetry in it. So let's bring this out. In German we say, ich bin gespannt wie ein Pfeilbogen. If it's really returning to zero, actually it should. Yeah, link is in. I just restarted. So, yeah, actually this looks pretty good. We are in the transparent in the boundary clock mode of the switch, and actually this switch is really performing better in boundary clock mode, which is actually also the better mode. It's unlimited scalable. You have these security features and so on. That's also why I might not dig in this transparent clock switch problem. So we have now an offset between 0 and 50 nanoseconds. I think this could be okay for the I think this could be okay for the next ticket sale for 40C3. Actually, I just heard their server is only NTP synchronized. So it might be that was the reason that I didn't get the ticket and had to do this speech for getting a ticket. But that's just a rumor. Getting to the end. So today's challenges we are actually facing, it's really these PTP implementations in the hardware, it differs a lot from vendor to vendor. There is still a lot of bugs. When rebooting the devices, they do a time jump. You've seen this time jump in before. Some of the devices do this hardware timestamping after the queue. They should do it in front of the queue. They should do it after the queue, but they do it in front of the queue. Their internal oscillator, does the switch support PTP on every interfaces? Does the switch have PTP role master? How many messages can the switch do? Is it working on every VLAN? Can you use it when you have the switches in stacked mode? Virtual port channels and MLACs are a big problem, actually. And there, on some vendors, there's a lot of special locations, like does the switch also work with PTP boundary mode when it's not full moon and when it's, the configuration was not done by Westwind? And it's really like this. We just had a situation here. The switch was in one mode, and then it does not support PTP. And now the switch has to be booted in another mode to support PTP. The end devices are also a problem, like the jitter tolerance, best master clock algorithm over different interfaces, PTP version 1. As we heard in the talk before about error mode, GNSS jamming and spoofing is a big thing. It's getting more and more. So actually, PTP distribution is getting importanter than ever. Actually, looking at the Swiss internet provider, it would be very nice if you would just provide PTP as a service from the internet, because they have PTP hardware support in the switches. Would be very nice. And these different PTP profiles, like in audio and video, we are doing multicast for these packets. The telco is doing unicast. AVB is doing MAC addresses, not IP addresses, and the message rates also differ. And it's actually, this switch has a clock in it, and it wouldn't be a problem just to translate from one profile in another, but actually some switches are sold for AVB or for AV, some are sold for telco, so they only support these profiles they are sold for. But large-scale deployment of PTP is possible. The quality, the clocks will never get directly to a zero. It will always be a little bit jittery. There is this newer version called White Rabbit, which can be like really down to the last digit, but the normal PTB version 2 is more like plus minus 20 nanoseconds is the best you can achieve. And as you have seen, you really have to verify and monitor it. So build a PTP wall clock. It's really a good gadget for every company, every team's background. And yeah, it's a cool protocol. I really like it. It has so a lot of feature sets about redundancies, and it's cool. So that was my talk. How is the synchronization? It's on time. Perfect.
Thank you, Oliver. So the sheet already says it. Are there any questions?
Yes.
So, first, have a go at the microphone.
You showed those follow-up messages that the switches send to correct the time that the packets spend in their buffer. What happens when you have multiple switches, like you do in your test setup? Are multiple follow-up messages generated?
No, actually, they read out the time of the first, and then they add their time to it, and so on and so on, so it's scalable.
And that is precise above multiple hops. So you said the network operators should add that as a service. So even if they have, like, I don't know, 10 switches in a row, that still is precise?
It depends on the actual implementations. There are really better ones and better ones. But in theory, it could be, definitely, because the message comes in. He has all the time of the world to read the already inserted correction field, to calculate its own, to add it to it, and send the packet out. Because the follow-up message is not like a time-critical message. It just has to arrive. You have to read the value. Like if I tell someone, hey, it's 5 o'clock, and then I say, but the correction value is 1 minute, he can receive this correction value at any time. He just has to match it and set it. So it's, yeah.
But especially for AV setups, you also have to kind of use the time that you got in a time-sensitive manner. So I don't want to wait like 5 minutes to correct my clock for another second.
Yeah, of course. But we are talking about nanomilliseconds, so it's definitely good enough. In a big setup, you can always rely on boundary clocks, which they are having their own clock, so it becomes even more scalable. But 10 transparent clocks in a row, it would be possible, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you as well. And we have a question from the internet.
The internet wants to know why you need this for video. Is 27 megahertz PCR and MPEG TS not enough, or?
Why we need it for video? It's you can use video without PTP synchronization. There's always a way to use it without PTP synchronization, just receiving the incoming packets and play them out. But if you want to have it on multiple monitors, on video walls, and so on, if you want to have it synchronized with the audio, and you just want to have it in a clean way, and you say, it's like, I just do PTP, I do it everywhere, I measure it once, it's there, it's a service for everyone. So you can use it and you can benefit of it, and you will never have any troubles with synchronization.
Okay, then microphone number 2 in the back.
Yeah, thank you. Very interesting talk. When we briefly looked at your switches, one of them said it was master on both port 1 and port 18. Was that correct? Was it how it's meant to be?
Let's have a look. So, show PTP. This one is, yeah. So, that's on his point of view. So, on this port, 11, there is the time transmitter. So, he's the time receiver on this port. On the other port, which is port number 1, is the other port of the measurement device. Vice, and port number 18 is the port going down to the second switch. So here is the role of the time transmitter. He sends the time to the second switch, and he's sending the time to the measurement device. So usually, yeah, he's receiving the time on one interface and multiplying it to all the other interfaces.
Lovely. I also see the knot. So this answer should have satisfied. Let's go for the microphone at the front.
So when I want to have precise time on my Linux machine, I guess I shouldn't rely on the IP stack of Linux, but I need some special hardware.
Actually, there is a Daemon PTP4L, which you can use. It's open source. And there are a lot of interfaces which support hardware timestamp. So they read out the timestamp in the packet before it enters the OS and passes this timestamp to the PTP4L stack. So we don't rely on the OS itself because you read them out in the hardware of the physical interface.
So they do some DMA then in the end towards the direct memory access.
Actually, I'm not that deep into it, but you have to look out like the Intel 210 chipset is a chipset that can do this hardware timestamping. There are a lot of it. There's a command. You can check for it if this interface is supporting the hardware timestamping. But I don't know how is it exactly working in the back.
It's fine. Yeah. Just wondering about the IP stack because of the jitter. Thank you.
Welcome.
Then.
You see, that room is not that bigger than Swinog. And the other thing is, I've got an answer for you because you're already answered like all the open source thing. The IXPs had a discussions that they will consider implementing PTP because it's needed. So that's a thing that's happening. And we, as a Swiss IXP, we will do it. And as soon as we've got open source things.
Thank you. Very cool.
Another question from the internet.
The internet wants to know if there is a crypto development ongoing for PTP, like NTS is for NTP.
Actually, have to be honest, I'm not into cryptography that much. I know there is something going on, and there is a standard, but I don't know how much is it implemented, because actually cryptography and time-sensitive things, it's always a little bit like cryptography always needs time, and it's hard to foresee how much time it needs. So, yeah, I think it's hard that it will be implemented widely.
From the perspective of the NTP time server that's sending the time, do you know how it gets from like the GNSS pulse per second to actual time? Because it seems like a bit of a chicken and egg situation where you need a ground truth to say the time is now this after 1 second has passed.
Actually, you need three satellites to. I'm not that much in GNSS, also to be honest, as I understand it. You have to have three satellites to get your absolute position. So the time transmitter is running since 10 o'clock, thanks to Mirko for organizing it. So it took his time to really get his accurate location. And then once it got the location, like the coordinates, then it needs a fourth satellite. And of course, and now he knows the distance between himself and the satellite, and if the pulse is coming from the satellite, he knows I have to add this delay to get to the actual time. And then it has an internal oscillator, which is disciplined over time, and then this internal oscillator, which can be a rubidium, in this case it's an oven-controlled oscillator, which has an internal frequency running, and then this Q factor is calculated.
Yeah, it's just running a phase-locked loop to be able to keep track of the time in between the pulses.
Exactly, yes. But cool. I'm not that deep into hardware, but that's how I understood it.
Cheers.
Thanks.
You mentioned oscillator errors, but in my experience, even NTP does a decent job in like correcting for a clock drift, for a clock for a frequency difference. Do you, down to 1 ppm of actual error, do you have the same thing in PTP for correcting for the clock difference?
For the clock difference.
For the clock frequency difference, I mean, for the clock drift.
It's like, yeah, you have this phased locked loop, and then it needs some time to. It's like a Plattenspieler, a turntable. So, like, if you really had one of these really old turntable, which like took for 1 hour till it's got this normal speed, it also needs a lot of time when you like hold it to get out of the speed. So all these devices, they have some sort of internal oscillator. They train it to the same frequency. So in PTP, it's actually there is the time, and you can get the frequency out of it, and you can get the phase out of it by disciplining this internal oscillator.
Thank you.
Okay, then another question.
So to the gentleman that wanted to know how to synchronize your Linux server, what you can do if you have enough money, you buy a Solarflare FPGA-enabled network card, like in trading, and then use that, and this gives you the most correct time you can possibly have.
Thanks. Also, if someone is here in trading business or other businesses that using PTP, I'm really happy to talk and to chat how they use it in their industries.
So then to the back.
Hey, so if we wanted to synchronize all our clocks to the ticket server for the next Congress, and we do that over the public internet, is PTP still better than NTP, or does it not really make a difference because we don't control the network in between?
Yeah, actually, it's not made for it. So it theoretically it can work, but it's not made for it. It relies, it's getting worse the more jitter and traffic you have. But yeah, if an ISP decides to enable the hardware support in the switches and add it as a service, then it would be okay. But else, it's not made for it. You can force it to synchronize over the internet, but it's not made for it. It's definitely for getting a, you can, out of a Raspberry Pi, you can build your own time transmitter. So this might be a nice project for the next ticket pre-sale. Yeah.
So we have another question from the internet.
The internet wants to know, what timing differences do humans perceive, so hear or see? So how close are we to something that would not be distinguishable for humans?
Actually, in a video, it's really, it's like really bad. If you do a slow-mo video of this one, you will see this one really moving to the third digit after the point, kind of okay-ish. But in the audio, the human ears is really precise, because back in the days, you have the timing difference between the two ears let you know where the beer is coming from. And if you heard it correctly, you know in which direction to run. So the people which had good direction hearing actually were the one that survived. So we're really, it's down to nanoseconds. It's all our, if we hear something is coming from there, it's only this time difference between, or the, mostly it's the time difference between the left and the right ear, so there we are really precise. So it's down to nanoseconds. Yeah.
Then, the question from the front.
One question, if you're planning on rolling this out into the internet, where is the difference from when you're injecting two satellite clocks into the network? Is there a protocol, is there a time in the protocol to decide which boundary clock is the first and which from we have one source here, one true source of the time, and when you're injecting two, is that supposed or supposed to happen, or is that just a funny coincidence and I thought it up?
Actually, I cannot talk for every profile and every everything using it, but as I know, it's always about priorities. Or so okay. You say. So it's not about really the time that's in it. It's like who's more important. So okay. You decide for one. Of course, you can do a receiver that receives time from multiple and then does some sort of averaging it out. Okay. But usually for the protocol, there is an election and there is a winner. Okay. And like in politics, it's not always the best one.
It's it's just like you're deciding who is going to get the priority, and that's the time you get.
Exactly, yes.
All right, thanks.
Then one last question from the public at least. So the follow-up packet, how is that linked to the initial packet, to the packet before, and can we attack the follow-up packet in order to bend time?
Usually there's every sync message is carrying a sequence number, so it's referred by the sequence number, and yes, could be an attack vector to, could be.
Thanks. So if there are no further questions, or we have to cut short because we have not that much time left anymore, but thank you, Oliver. It's been a pleasure with you.
Thank you.